Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the January 19th, 2013 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Hey, welcome again as we begin another hour of discussion about our nation's space program. Hope everyone had a great week, and well, now this weekend, enjoying a little bit cooler weather outside. Why, it almost feels like fall around here today. Almost. Of course, I know the football season is almost over with only three more NFL games left to play. Well, four if you count the Pro Bowl, I guess. So before we talk space, let me just quick go way out on a limb here on this conference championship weekend and tell you that it would be nice if it were the Falcons-Patriots in the Super Bowl. It's probably going to be the 49ers and Patriots, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see the 49ers and the Ravens. So how's that for confidence? All right, on to outer space and topics along those lines. On today's program, George Torres will be joining us by phone a little bit later. George not only is a big-time vice president of communications for ATK's Aerospace Group, which is the company that made the space shuttle solid rocket motors, but he's also the 2013 chairman of the Coalition for Space Exploration, a group that I had something to do with once upon a time. We'll talk with George about his background, what his company is up to in the post-space shuttle world, and what the Coalition is doing to keep up support by the public for space exploration, along with all the usual features of our show, next launch, and terminal count coming in the last segment. Along the way, as always, we welcome and appreciate your thoughts, your questions, your comments that you might have about our space program. No topic is off limits. Give us a call by dialing 321-768-1240, or if you prefer, you can always send us an email. The address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, let's kick it off. Now it's time for another edition of our more or less weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. Well, to paraphrase Will Rogers, I never met a Russian that I didn't like. Like others in my general age bracket, I grew up at a time when the Cold War was just a term I heard on TV. I wasn't old enough to comprehend the potential horror of nuclear war or understand that it was a real threat at all. Russians seemed mysterious to me because I didn't know a lot about them. I knew we were racing them to the moon and that they were supposed to be the enemy, but my only real sense of them came from watching I Dream of Jeannie on TV or the episode of Gilligan's Island where a pair of cosmonauts splashed down in the lagoon. When I visited the Kennedy Space Center before the 1975 Apollo-Soyuz test project, there was a full-scale mock-up of the Apollo Command and Service Modules docked to the Soyuz spacecraft that was on display in the transfer aisle of the Vehicle Assembly Building. I remember thinking as I looked at it how strange and foreign the Soyuz looked and how difficult it was to get the color of it just right when I returned home to Minnesota and painted my model of the joint spaceships that I had bought in the KSC gift shop. A little later in life, when I was in college at Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach and worked on the student newspaper The Avion, I drove down to KSC to cover a press conference involving a handful of Russian students who were touring the Space Center, and much to my surprise, they looked and acted just like me. I also met my first Russian cosmonaut that day, Vladimir Solovyov, and through a coincidence of being in the same place at the same time later that day over at the visitor complex, I got to spend some quality time with just him and his interpreter. And can you believe it? He wasn't at all like those cosmonauts I had seen on Gilligan's Island. Since then, I've met many more Russians associated with the space program and have traveled twice to Moscow. I've talked with them, eaten meals with them, drank vodka with them, and I can honestly say I have never had a bad experience with any of them, despite the vodka. I have come to respect our Russian counterparts in the space program, and based on my own observations and discussions with our American astronauts who have flown on Russian hardware, I trust that the Russians know what they are doing in space. No, I don't like that we don't have our own way to get into and out of orbit right now and have to rely on the Russians, but that's a problem our nation's leaders created for ourselves. It's not the Russians' fault. All we can do now is work to get our own capability up and running as fast as possible. And I'll give you one possible reason why that might be. I'll do that by saying that as much as I admire and still respect the Russian people, I'm having serious anger issues and feeling outrageous waves of frustration, disappointment, and even bitterness toward the Russian government and President Putin. What has me so upset, you ask? Well, believe it or not, it's the fact that as of the new year, the Russian government has banned any Americans from adopting orphaned Russian children. Now, I know it's not your usual space topic. Anyway, according to our U.S. Space State Department, Americans have adopted more than 60,000 Russian children since 1991. Of those, Russian government officials say, 19 have died during the past decade, thankfully, and they blame the American court system for allowing irresponsible parents to adopt, and that all of these orphans are therefore better off staying in their home country. Russian officials say there are more than 650,000 children right now who are considered orphans, and only about 110,000 of them live in state institutions. The ban is reportedly in retaliation for a recent law enacted in the United States that prevents those Russians who have been associated with human rights violations from obtaining visas to come here or maintaining bank accounts here, a move some Russian officials say is an attack on Russia. Last weekend, tens of thousands of Russian citizens took to the streets of Moscow to protest the ban. Commentators there and abroad are saying this is one issue that has become a hot-button trigger for the overall disgust Russians have for their leaders. This issue has triggered a hot button for me as well. I know a few families whose lives have been so blessed by adopting a child, whether that child came from Russia, China, or elsewhere. I can't imagine how these gifts from God could ever be as cared for, safe, and loved if they had remained in an impersonal state-run orphanage. But what makes this particularly personal for me is the fact that in 1995, on my way home from Moscow after covering the launch of Norm Thagard as the first American to ride a Russian rocket, I helped a young American mother with her brand new adopted Russian baby girl. At the airport in Moscow, waiting at the gate, I was watching with some amount of amusement and sympathy as the obviously inexperienced young lady wrestled with managing her baby diaper bag, carry-on bag, and baby carrier. The tiny baby girl was so pretty, wearing pink clothes and lace and all being so feminine. She made me miss my own family back home in Florida, which at the time meant that my three boys were ages 7, 5, and 3. As the experienced father, I reached out to the woman and offered to help. I learned she was your classic Carrie Bradshaw, sophisticated New York type, single woman looking for more meaning in life and had decided she wanted to be a mother too. With her newly adopted Russian baby, she now resembled a scene from the Diane Keaton movie, Baby Boom. Anyway, in helping her with her stuff, she let me carry the little girl on the plane in Moscow and off the plane and through customs in New York. What a privilege and honor it was to be the one to deliver that little baby to the United States and present her to her new grandparents who were waiting there. Those are the very kind of human moments that should not be prevented from continuing to happen because of the international gamesmanship played by politicians. And for that very reason, I'm not suggesting we abandon our Russian partners in space. On the contrary, we must work even closer together and hope that the trust and friendship we demonstrate in space can be seen by Russia's leaders and convince them that what they are doing is not right and must be stopped. If our children are our future in space, we must do everything we can together to care for and love them, no matter what country they are from or what country they grow up in. And that's Orbital Inclinations. We'll be back with George Torres in just a moment. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com.
Well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program. You can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, it seems like a long time ago that I first met my next guest, and our paths have crossed on, well, numerous occasions. As we have each progressed through our careers, I'm happy to say that with his appointment as the 2013 chairman of the Coalition for Space Exploration, a group that I once had something to do about, well, we are once again on each other's radars, and I really couldn't be more pleased. Joining me on the phone, George Torres is Vice President for Communications with ATK's Aerospace Group and a loyal New York Giants fan. He joins us now by phone from, I guess, your home, George, in California. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great, Jim. Always good to hear your voice.
Yeah, so how about your Giants? First of all, let's get that important business out of the way. What happened to your team this year that you can't repeat the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you know, it was disappointing. And I do give condolences to you. I thought the Vikes were going to go further. You almost had it.
Yeah.
But we folded, basically. Yeah. I think you guys did much better. I'm really surprised, and they're going to have to do a lot of soul-searching. They got the talent, as you know.
Yeah.
They proved it last year. But I heard your predictions in the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a little more specific. I think it's the 49ers. After what they did to one of your favorite teams.
Yeah.
What's that team? Green Bay?
The Cheeseheads, right.
Yeah, that's the one. I think they showed what they got, and if they're anything close to that, I think they'll go all the way.
Well, then what about Patriots-Ravens?
I'm sorry for anybody from Boston, but anybody but New England is my mantra.
Yeah,
anybody.
That's so, how we feel. That's how we feel about the Packers. Anybody can beat them, right? Well,
that's
great. So let's move on to the space of let's talk about you, George, a little bit, and give everyone a sense of where you're coming from and how you got to where you are. New York City, born and raised, I guess, and now aerospace guy in California. How does a guy get from one place to the other?
Yeah, good question. And in between that, lived in Utah for about 5 years.
Yeah.
So, but basically, I ended up finishing college in California, and had all intentions of going back to New York. But then got hooked by the space program, and I was lucky enough to work at a place called Rockwell International when they were building the space shuttle orbiter and the main engines.
Right.
And so just. You know, things happen for a reason. And I always had an interest in the space program, but once I got more involved, I was really hooked. And as you know, I ended up being such a buff. I wrote in my spare time a couple of books, just like you've written some books. That's how we first met, I think, back to the days when you and I first met, when you were in Florida today and things like that.
Well, and tell us about the books. Give a little plug. Can a guy go get them on Amazon, or are they long since lost to the collector's shelves?
Yeah, they're pretty much long lost. I'm going to date myself here, but one was pre-Challenger and one was post-Challenger.
Yeah, no, I've read
so, you know, one was 1990 and one was 85. And it was really something that transformed my career and really helped me put stuff on paper and really what I do in my life, much like you, is translate engineering into English so you can, you know, speak to anybody or if you have to go deep technically, we could do that too. But for the books, they were really written more for, folks that want to go to a science museum or, air and space or the KSC Visitor Center, those kind of places. And I had a lot of fun. It was, a duty of love. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and those skills will serve you well as the coalition chairman, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I want to talk a little bit more about ATK. We know that ATK is, as the retirement of the shuttle program, maker of the solid rocket motors, you know, that job has gone to a lot of different people as companies and divisions have sold and moved around and whatnot, exchanged hands.
Yep.
Tell us about ATK Aerospace. What are you guys covering right now in the space program and kind of what are you up to? Give us the lay of the land there.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And it'll probably surprise some people who remember us as the shuttle booster guys. because the aerospace group actually has five divisions now, and that includes two that deal with launch vehicles, two that deal with satellites, and another one that's in the aircraft structures business, like we do composite structures for a lot of different things.
Sure.
So, but start with propulsion. You know, we've transferred the experience on the shuttle into the SLS boosters, and really in between there was the four segment turning into the five segment, and that's what we're working on right now for the SLS, and we're going to have a test fire of one of those, actually what's known as a qualification motor, because we passed the design this summer or early fall, and that's coming right along. But what will really surprise folks is, besides the shuttle and SLS stuff, is ATK has built and delivered over 1,500 commercial solid rocket boosters.
Yeah. Yeah, all the different boosters that get strapped to the side of the rockets.
Well, some strap-ons, but also some stages on some vehicles.
Sure.
So, yeah, you're right, the strap-ons for things that you see all the time in Florida, like the Delta 2s and Delta 4s. But also, right now we're doing a second stage for Orbital's Antares vehicle.
Okay.
You know, the new commercial cargo one.
Sure, yep.
We do the second stage for that. We do the Athena launch vehicle with Lockheed Martin. We do both stages on that. That's flown out of Florida in the past, and we hope to do that again in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah.
We supply, what surprises a lot of people about solids and liquids, and we can talk about that later, but just about everybody in the world uses solids. You look at the Japanese, you look at the Indians, you look at Ariane, they have strap-on boosters. So it's one of those, how do you make the rocket do what's necessary for a given mission? And it's usually a combination of both works best. Depends on the mission.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and George, as we've been talking, I got an email from our old friend Walton Vieira, who was very interested, and I'm sure you might have expected this. Folks here at the Cape interested about the Liberty vehicle taking the old four-segment, Liberty five-segment? I don't even remember.
Five-segment
solid rocket motor, put an upper stage on it like we saw with the Ares 1.
Right.
You didn't get money for that, and it's kind of not been in the news. Can you say whether ATK is still pursuing that, or is that kind of an old discarded thing at this point?
It's far from discarded. You're right, we didn't get money for it, but what's been interesting is we've had so much interest for it, because the thing that we spoke openly about was not only the payload capability, but we said we could do it for less than $180 million.
Which is pretty cheap,
and it can carry, 45,000 pounds, which is, on a par with a Delta IV.
Sure.
And so with that price point and payload capability, we still have folks knocking on our door. So it's not dead by any means, and we still speaking to a number of customers, and we'll see what comes of it. But right now it's a little premature to talk about future, but it really is an attractive vehicle, and a lot of customers have called about it.
With just about another couple of minutes left here, George, before our break, go back and talk some more about the five-segment solid rocket motor. We know the space shuttle had four segments. They're stacked together here at the Cape and have worked very successfully at the end of the program and actually for many years. Really, I mean, let's just say since Challenger, they've just been outstanding boosters. And now you put a fifth segment on that and make it a little more powerful. It's a little taller. Is there really a lot more to the design than just stacking another segment on there, or is this a whole new booster?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because besides the current booster we're working on, we're working on an advanced booster for NASA, and they work together. So if you look at the first two flights that have been announced for SLS, you're right. It's the same five-segment, the same steel cases that we used on a shuttle. But on the advanced booster, we're looking at composite cases,
Oh, yeah.
which a lot lighter and actually stronger where, so two things happen there, a lot more payload.
Right.
But because they're stronger, you can actually put more pressure in them. And along those lines, we're looking at different propellants that we currently use on commercial boosters that are different from, the historical norm of the shuttle. If you think about the shuttle, the propellant in that goes back to the 70s. Well, during the 80s and 90s, we've come up with much more advanced propellants that are higher energy, and so that's the kind of thing we can advance to along those lines. So those two things are the huge knobs that you can turn if you want to do some upgrades. There's other things that are more internal to it, like the thrust control. We would go to an electric as opposed to hydraulic, the kinds that are out there now that you got to use toxic fuels, and we could get away from that, save a lot of weight, and there's many other things that are more technical and deep, but those are the big ones.
Okay, hey, George, stand by. George, we're going to hit the bottom of our hour break. We're going to take our five-minute built and hold, get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. We'll be back more with George Torres from ATK, talk about the Coalition for Space Exploration. I'm Jim Behnke. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back, everyone, to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Reminder that our phone lines and online inbox are open for your questions or comments about our space program. The phone number is 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, let me do a little bit of history lesson for you before we bring George back. Following the 2003 Columbia disaster, as NASA and the industry was getting ready to do the return to flight, the industry got together and said, we need to get folks excited about the space program again. We need to explain what's going on and get folks going. And so a germ of an idea of a coalition for space exploration was formed. The idea that all these individual aerospace companies would work together with common marketing, common messaging, common themes, and be very focused and targeted in getting the word out about how exciting our space shuttle program was in returning to flight. And then just as they were getting going, in fact, I think it was either the day before or the day after, President Bush announces the vision for space exploration, that we're going to go back to the moon, onto Mars and beyond. We're going to fly the shuttle, finish the space station, build a new vehicle for getting us there, a new heavy lift, new capsule. That all led to Constellation, the Ares 1, the Ares 5, and all of that. And so the Coalition for Space Exploration essentially began in 2004. At that time, I left journalism and went to work for the Space Foundation, which was one of the organizing groups behind the coalition, and very quickly found myself basically as sort of the, I guess the way to say it would be office manager for the coalition, is sort of the guy that kept the executive director while everyone else made the decisions. I wouldn't go so far as to say president. It wasn't quite like that. It was more like the staff officer, the chief of staff, if you will, the office guy running all of that. And was very involved when I was with the Space Foundation for a couple of years doing coalition. Of course, as I left the Space Foundation to do other things, it moved on. Each year, the coalition from its group of industry representatives elects a chairman to run the organization for the next year. And my guest today, George Torres, the vice president for communications from the ATK Aerospace Group. He's out in Los Angeles, out in California. And he is the chairman this year for the 2013 edition of the Coalition, and that's what we want to talk a little bit more about today. George, with that history lesson, tell us from your perspective, what is the Coalition for Space Exploration up to these days, especially following the cancellation of Constellation? What are you all about? How do you do what you do?
Sure, Jim. And boy, you covered a lot of ground there, and we do miss you. I'm sure we'll bump into each other more, but what the coalition represents now, and you really hit it on the head, we got a lot of different companies, and like all businesses, we compete against each other, but what we decided was let's cooperate on the big picture and be an advocate for that, and that's what we're all about. So if you look at our member companies, it turns out we're actually Even though, lots of us were on Constellation, lots of us were on other things, and lots of us have evolved to new things.
Sure.
Like, you know, ATK, I mentioned before, we're now on Antares 2 with Orbital. We've got another one on Antares 2. We got Aerojet in there. They do the first stage. We have ISS, and, you know, of course, Boeing is the prime for ISS. Boeing has the CST-100,
right.
Commercial crew.
They're commercial, yeah.
And we have folks even on JWST, the new James Webb Space Telescope,
right?
That is targeted for 2018. So when you look at that diversity, when I say Coalition for Space Exploration, when we say exploration, we mean with the big E, because it's all the above, and we try not to be so tunnel vision on whether it's commercial crew or cargo or gestation or SLS and Orion. It's all the above. And it's not an either-or. It's really, if you look at this group, we're like a microcosm of NASA at the top.
Yeah.
We play in all those fields. So when we get together and the things we do, and a little info for your listeners, if you ever want to look at our website, it's simply spacecoalition.com. And there's a ton of things on there about what we do. There's a lot of info on there. We track a lot of news. You can get a daily news feed. We have other things that we'll talk about as we go, Jim, that we're doing with NASA visitor centers to really reach the general public and get their input on stuff.
When I was with the coalition, there were sort of two sides to the coalition, and that is to say that there was some emphasis in a group of people on the public, and then there was another emphasis by another group of people who were part of this big coalition on the legislative side, and I wouldn't go so far to say lobby, but certainly the education and the work that needs to be done in the hallways in Capitol Hill in Washington. The coalition today, as it's evolved, is there still that legislative component? Is there still that quote-unquote lobbying effort that goes on, or is your attention really more geared toward the public right now?
It really is the public, and it's more the public outreach. I mean, but by doing that, we actually get interest from political folks, and so that's a natural thing. I mean, you know, if Washington looks at all kinds of things, and with the internet today, everyone sees everything. So,
right.
But to answer your direct question, no, we're focused on the public and really trying to work the national issues across the board.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize again, George, or help you emphasize the big E. You know that. That it's not just one program. You know, one of my problems with our own space community, our own friends and family, is that, you know, you can get, let's say that, you know, and it kind of happened in a way when the Vision for Space Exploration came along. You know, we're handed, you know, a $20 billion budget by Congress to go explore space, and that's like the greatest thing that could possibly happen to us. And then we all sit and argue about how to do it, and we can't ever seem to find a single voice. And it's always either or. It's humans or robots. It's moon or Mars. It's asteroids or something else. And it's never how do we come together as a large group to have a focused vision that works together that we can all get behind and support. And I know the coalition's working to do that. I wish that we could do more with maybe some of these other activist groups that are out there, and maybe I'm pontificating a little bit too much for you, George, but you know, to get everybody working together. I mean, you know, the old why can't we just all get along? Do you work with some of these other groups and try to work together, or are you all out in your own out in the desert, you know, wandering?
No, we do actually talk to other groups, and a lot of our member companies are a part of these other groups. So some of it is through osmosis, and some of it is more formal, but I think you hit it on the head. It's really about the big picture. And, you know, one of the toughest things with the space program is we do have what you've said. It seems like we toggle back and forth. And when an administration changes, the new administration has a different idea. Well, forget the next 4 years. Well, you know, what about the next president
right. And
the president after that? To get something done big in space by the government requires something that's going to go over three or four presidents.
Right.
You know,
right.
If we're talking about going to Mars. That could be, you know, depending on how optimistic you are and how much funding you have, that's a decade, that's two decades, you know. So you just recognize how many presidents change hands, how many Congresses change hands, and that's what's tough. So that's why we try to keep it at a higher level and say, yeah, we know we have short-term things, but let's not take our eye off the ball and the long term.
Yeah, you have to work. Talk a little bit more too in our time remaining, George. Again, about the individual. You mentioned the website. You know, I remember, again, I'm telling you, back in the day, we talked for a long time at one point about actually, you know, could there be individual memberships? You know, and a lot of times we were basically turning people away that wanted to send us $20 and join a club of some kind. With the website out there now, and a very well done website with all the the interactivity you've got there, am I guessing correctly? That's the primary focus. If you're an individual that wants to be involved with the coalition, help the coalition, do the kind of things we're talking about, it's the website is the first place to go and probably the best place to go.
Yes, definitely. SpaceCoalition.com is the place. And but let me tell you some new things we're doing that I think we get a lot more interest and activity. And we did an early version of this last year where we had a contest for videos where people did their own videos, The subject is why space matters. Okay, so this year we're doing it, but we had some prizes last year. But this year we got prizes for a trip for a family of four to NASA visitor centers.
Wow!
So, including KSC, including Huntsville, someone could go to space camp, including JSC visitor center. And there's another website that'll be of very interest. It's visitnasa.com. That actually has all the NASA visitor centers, all 10 of them, plus it has the other two sites that have shuttle orbiters now, the Intrepid in New York and the California Science Center. Well, they're all on one website, visitnasa.com. And anyway, what we're doing now with this contest, which will be in the March time frame, is working it with the NASA visitor centers and bringing a lot more. And you know, you and I have been to all these centers, but for folks that haven't, or if you've just been to the KSC visitor site, this gives a family an opportunity to go to some of these others.
That's outstanding. Hey, George, stand by. I'm gonna wrap up that thought when we come back. We'll also get you caught up on our weekly launch forecast and put George through the ringer of terminal comp. Hear what's on his mind about that as well. Stand by, everybody. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, reminding that you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week using some of the more popular social media sites. We are on the web, of course, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, where we have links to an archive of past Space Talk shows, text versions of orbital inclinations. We also have a presence on Twitter with at Space Talking, and we have a Space Talk page on Facebook as well. All right, real quick, let's look ahead to the launch forecast here locally. We are another week closer to the first launch of the new year. An Atlas V rocket is targeted to lift off from Complex 41 at the Cape on Tuesday, January 29th, between 8:52 and 9:32 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. No solid rocket boosters on this one, I'm afraid. The vehicle is to carry for NASA the first of a new generation of tracking and data relay system communication satellites into an orbit high above the Earth's equator. The TDRA satellites serve as NASA's command, control, and communication link between spacecraft, such as the Hubble Space Telescope or the International Space Station, and the agency's various mission control centers on the ground. Now, this particular TDRS is the first and third generation of the spacecraft design. The satellite itself is now encapsulated within the Atlas V's rocket's nose cone. That complete assembly, still at the Astrotech facility in Titusville, it was scheduled to be moved out to the launch pad at the Cape today, but this little touch of windy and blustery weather we've had as the cool front came through has prompted a delay in that move until tomorrow. Still, there's enough padding in the schedule to account for the little delay. NASA reporting again that the launch does, in fact, remain targeted for January 29th at 8:52 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about these and all the various other launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and look for the link to our local launch forecast. On the phone with us from California, ATK Vice President of Communications, Chairman this year, the Coalition for Space Exploration, George Torres is with us. George, we were talking about the NASA Visitor Center. I was particularly intrigued by the visitnasa.com webpage. So during the break, I checked out the site, and man, it's a nice little collection of all the different links to all the different sites, and you can sign up for a cool newsletter, which I've just done.
I'm not surprised.
is that a coalition managed webpage and a coalition produced newsletter?
No. Actually, that's managed by the NASA Visitor Centers. They've all gotten together, and we learned about it as we started speaking to the KSC Visitor Center and JSC in Huntsville. And so they've all come together, recognizing that, you know, that they do a lot of similar things, and folks have interest in all of them.
Well, I heard that they were talking about doing some marketing stuff together, and I thought that was more like trips and discounts and ticket sharing and all that, but this is pretty cool. You were mentioning, yeah, you know, an opportunity for people to visit the different NASA centers. Just take a real quick minute here because we're really short on time. Was there a contest as part of that, or was there some finish to that story?
Yeah, and that one's on the Coalition website. That's on the spacecoalition.com, and it's up in the top right. It says Dreams of Space, Why Explore Space? And you click on that, and it talks about submitting your own video. And now last year, I'll tell you, we got about 120 videos from all across the country and came up with five winners for different things, iPads and others. And we'll have other gifts. But this year, the top three are visits to those three visitor centers that I've mentioned. And we'll have others as well. And we came up with some really cool videos.
Yeah.
That it's amazing how much interest is out there, as you well know from your listeners, on what should be going on in space, and simply the name of the contest is Why Explore Space? You really see what dreamers we have out there and true believers in this country, and it comes from all over. So
yeah,
it's a really fun example, and when we put up the winners, of course, that everyone could see.
I was going to say, the past winners have been outstanding. It's really amazing what you can do when you get interested people together with some skill sets that we all basically possess in some way or manner. But then, you know, when you're not limited to the committee meetings and all of that, what these folks can do in their garage almost, if you will. Really great.
That's
hey,
right.
George, it's time for Terminal Comp, our new feature at the end of Space Talk, in which we're going to ask you five simple questions to get to know you a little bit better. By the way, George, this is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers. This is not a contest. So at home, please, no wagering. All right, five questions. Here we go, George, real quick. Coolest rocket?
I got to hedge a little bit, and I'll be quick as I can, but I got to say the Saturn V as one of them.
Yeah.
But I've never seen one launch, unfortunately.
Right.
But if you see one live, like going to the Saturn V visitor complex and walk under it, your mind spins.
It's just boggling.
But personally, the shuttle, because not just because of, you know, how it looks and how it flies, but for what it did. I mean, if you think about the repairs it did, about building the space station, you know, all the things it could do, the repairs, think about Hubble. Hubble would have failed if we couldn't repair. So I'm going to hedge a little bit, and I'm going to mention both of them.
All right, cool. All right, more quicker answers here. Is that right? First launch you saw or remember?
Good English.
Yeah.
STS-9.
Oh.
The first one I went to, that happened to be Space Lab 1.
Columbia, John
December.
Young, yeah.
They're very good, John Young, can't fool you, yeah. It was, know, the first space lab, which was, a predecessor to the space station.
I'll tell you someday how I got caught in a blizzard in Minnesota during that mission. Most prized space memorabilia, with about 15 seconds to finish three questions.
Oh, I have an Apollo Command Service Module plaque from North American Aviation, which is the predecessor of Rockwell. And on that plaque, it has the poem, High Flight.
Oh, very cool. Best space TV series or movie?
I could go on and on and on, but I'm going to say Magnificent Desolation.
Oh, all right.
Which was the HBO special that interviewed the Apollo astronaut.
Okay, and lastly, and real quick, just one word, Moon, Mars, or Beyond?
All the above.
True spokesman. George Torres, thanks for being on the program with us today. We'll be in touch with coalition activities in the future, and this program, the microphone, always open to you guys to publicize whatever it is you're doing here. So really appreciate you being on the program today.
Thank you, Jim. As always, good speaking to you.
Take care, George. We'll be in touch. All right, there goes George Torres. Next week on Space Talk, we're going to be joined on the phone with Daniel Cohen, a filmmaker who has produced a very moving documentary highlighting the story of Israeli astronaut Ilan Ramon, who, of course, was lost with his six astronaut colleagues aboard Columbia 10 years ago. It was this past Wednesday, by the way, the anniversary of Columbia's launch. We'll talk with Dan about his film called Space Shuttle Columbia Mission of Hope, which you can watch on PBS beginning at the end of this month. Check your local listings. A week later, on February 2nd, our former lead flight director, our good friend Wayne Hale, will return to this program, talk about what was going on in Mission Control. That is it for today. Space Talk, a production of Mindless Solutions, brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for today's program. Please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMNB presents the usual weekend edition of the Glenn Beck program. Everybody enjoy your football games tomorrow. I'm Jim Behnke, and we'll talk to you again real soon.